Do you think I'm evil, James?
Evil isn't a clinical diagnosis. Good and evil are societal constructs, effectively subjective value statements.
My name is Legion, for we are many.
Well, you know, if that's the case, your side's not doing too well.
You really believe that, James?
Yeah. We've never been freer. Literacy is at an all-time high. We're working to eliminate racism, intolerance, gender inequality. People can love who they want, be who they want, do what they want. Diversity is no longer a dream. Hate speech is no longer tolerated. And politically, we're reclaiming the moral high ground.
James, the average high school graduate reads at a sixth grade level. You have basketball players making $30 million a year decrying racism, all while wearing sneakers made from slave labor.
Now, here's something for you. Right now, your world currently has 40 million slaves.
More than the Romans had at the height of their empire. You want to know the best part, though? Half of those, half, are sex slaves, James. As for hate speech, well, you want to hear some irony? We didn't even come up with that one. You did it all by yourself. Sometimes you amaze even us.
I fail to see the humor.
Bottom line is you're done. It's over, that's it.
And we did it all right to your face, James. And now there's evil everywhere. And no one even cares.
Yeah, I don't agree.
Proving that we achieved our goal. Slowly, with your movies, your TV, and your media, we desensitized you, redirected your worldview to the point that you can't even recognize evil when it's right in front of your face. More to the point, James, you can't even feel it when you're doing it. And as for winners and losers, well, like it's decided at the time of death. The exact numbers are a closely guarded secret, but there are more of you ending up in my master's house than with the enemy.
Happy Heresies, and welcome to the Desert of the Real. Welcome to Aeon Bide on this Age of Hermes, these Gnostic times, and this Philip K. Dick world. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your Pompidus of Gnosis. So good that you have materialized here at the virtual Alexandria, as I like to say. And again, very interesting times. I hear there is some sort of eclipse coming soon that will wipe out the world. But as the Gnostics said, the world ended before we were created, and we are just the remnants of the apocalypse floating in an ocean of existence, finding meaning and providing meaning and healing to the universe. There is a great story or ancient tale where an eclipse is simply the sun and the moon being allowed to have a relationship, allowed to have a little romantic tryst, because they are always separate when you think about it. Kind of like the movie Lady Hawk, but with the sun and the moon. If anybody remembers that great movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and Roy Batty. But today we are very excited, as always, to have David Block for the second part of his new trilogy. David, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Miguel. Thank you for having me. And it's a pleasure to be with you all, you and your audience, and Graham for the first time.
Pleasure is all ours. And yes, Vance is actually taking a much needed vacation. He will be unplugged for the next week or two. So with us, yes, we got Graham being the wingman. Graham, how are you doing?
Very good. Happy to give Vance some time to get hand rested and ready.
Indeed. We all need to unplug or take care of business sometimes, and that's a good thing. So awesome. I'm looking. Yes, we are live on YouTube. We are live on Rumble. There was a glitch for Rockfin. But for those of you who are subscribed on Rockfin, don't worry. I'll simply upload the video today, as probably today or tomorrow. I will upload the audio version on all podcast providers. It happens. such is the way during any Mercury retrograde, and it's been affecting me. So good to see everybody in the chat room. As always, if you have any questions, please super chat them so that Graham can separate them. And of course, we always really appreciate your support to keep the lights of the Pleroma on here at AM Byte. So I don't have much housekeeping. Excited next week. We've got Alex Sikiris, who just wrote an incredible book. If you thought the ideas of James True and Jason Reza Giorgiani on AI were incendiary, you ain't seen nothing yet, because what Alex Sikiris has found out about AI is probably even more disturbing and, yeah, really incredible. So check it out. That will be early next week, as well as a show on Welsh magic and archonic fairies from Andrew Philip Smith, traditional podcast with my usual intro. So that's it. Well, David, you wanna, shall we just get started?
Yeah, let's rock and roll.
Let's rock and roll. Let's see. There you go.
There we go. Yeah, this is the second part in the trilogy, The Tower, Necromancy, and The Search for Eternity. And it's the second part. And the last part, I will decode The Lord of the Rings. I hope it will be great. Of course, it is good to view the first two parts before you view the third part. That's the reason why it's the trilogy. Yeah, so this part has five parts and a prologue. And in the prologue, I want to take you back to the first part a little bit and even go deeper in the topics we talked about in the first part. Then we have part one, Fingerprints of the Gods. Part two, The Gods in Memory. Part three, The Heart, Beat of the Machine. Part four, The Search for Eternity. And part five, A Single Grain of Sand in the Desert of Set. So let's start with the prologue, The Boatman. Yeah, I want to make a statement, and I will wrap up this part with the same statement in the end. When you die, you experience a boatman moment, meaning memory loss. When the seaman comes, you are reborn. In part one, we talked a lot about Enki and the letter Mem in Hebrew. And this letter Mem, I will talk a lot about that in this part. But I will deepen the understanding of this Hebrew letter. And it is vast and a very multi-layered understanding of it. So I will try to take you a long way on this understanding of the letter Mem. But to go back to the first part, we talked about Mem, the meaning of it is memory, language, nations, and science. And this is a very profound thing, and I will talk about it in this part. And language leads to evolution or devolution. And I think people doesn't understand how important our language really are for us as a species. And I will try to make that point across. So bear with me a little bit on this part, because it will be a little bit funny, but it is very a serious topic. Well, in this first part, again, we saw this bird came out or come with a bucket of water, and they have a pine cone in his hand. And the pine cone is a very important symbol here, because if you understand that water is memory and a gift that the gods gives to us, then it is also language is also a gift from the gods, right? So you have the cuneiform, for example, come from the Anunnaki gods. And the pine cone is also a symbol for your third eye. So you have language in connection with the third eye. And there is a reason for that as well, because language is about evolution, spiritual evolution. If you talk about devolution, then we talk about further fall into matter from a spiritual state. And you have this tree, they nurture this tree because you are part of nature, you're part of this energy pattern. And you are the most important part of that energy pattern. So let's start 3000 BC to about 500 BC. You can't make it like exact dates here. But during this period of time, we had a very symbolic language, like the cuneiform, like the hieroglyphs, like the runes, the Hebrew, the Phoenician, and even the Greek alphabet. And all this language was a very symbolic language, and each word have a meaning attached to it. For example, mem means water. And this language stimulating a thinking of the spiritual. The spiritual world is at forefront of this. You can argue that Greece is in between this and our new language. Our new language is a written language, it's a very scientific language, but it's not a symbolic language. I call this kind of a language which in the middle of this language devolution we are in right now. So this is the middle part. I will talk about the form language soon. But now, for now, I will take you on a devolution path with language. And then we go back to the oldest language. And the oldest language is about form and symbols. We all know, or probably know, that the cuneiform come from Sumer. And in this region, the Anunnaki appeared. And about 3200 BC. And the first city was Eridu, and it was Enki city. And it is Enki line that give us the written language in the form of a cuneiform. Enki's son was Marduk, and Marduk's son was Nabu. And it is Nabu that give us the written language. And another name for Nabu is, of course, Hermes or Tahuti or Thoth. It's the scribes of the gods. And he gives us the science of language. But cuneiform is a symbol language with many meanings and many different use for this language. We might view it as a simple language, but it is really profound if you want to aim at the metaphysical or at the spiritual level. And the aim during this period of time was more for the spiritual, metaphysical, not a written language that would describe the material realm in the first place, or in only matter, like how exact can we create a language that describes the phenomena in matter. That come about later on. And we can see this in the book of Daniel, for example. In the book of Daniel, we have this statue. They're talking about the head is gold and the chest is silver and then bronze and brass. And that this is about devolution of humanity. How we fall from a state, golden state in Sumer and Babylon, to a very material word of matter. We lose the connection with the metaphysical or with our spiritual spark or the idea that human is a spiritual creature. That is devolution. Now remember, For them, this is the evolution because they are very focused on the metaphysical and on the spiritual part of humanity. So the language makes us devolve into matter. Because language is a very important part of this evolution or devolution in man. So, for example, we have this famous tower incident, right? We have when the tower is destroyed, and the Bible is talking about how God fractured the language. He gave everyone his peculiar language, and for this reason, it was that the city was called Babylon, or Babel, or Babel, because God fractured humanity, and we start to speak different language that we couldn't collectively gather around on a metaphysical spiritual aim or quest. After the incident, nations came about, and in one text, and there are many texts about this incident, and I cannot read them all, of course. In this particular text, it says, when all men were one language, some of them built a high tower as if they would thereby ascend up to heaven. But the gods sent storms and wind and overthrew the tower and gave everyone his peculiar language. And for this reason, it was that the city was called Babylon or Babel. Now, there are much more going on in that story. I hope you understand that. And we will explore a couple of them, because the language is in forefront of this symbology with the tower, and also a real incident where humanity start to devolve from a higher state. But it's much more complicated than that, because it's also a war between different Anunnaki gods and factions. So let's go in today and talk about today's language. So this is Börje, a typical Swede working in his yard, right? And Börje have existed for like 2,000 years, or maybe 2,500 years. It is during this time our language started to describe what's in matter. So our language was aimed to describe things in the matter, not to try to talk about very advanced, difficult, metaphysical, spiritual subjects. And this Börje, don't be too happy about this now, because Börje is everywhere. He is in every country, in every town. And if they live two Börjes, two people in a city, one of them at least is a Börje, and maybe even both. And if you can imagine that the three are your own nation, then you start to get the grip of things there. And we are here today and even gone further down in matter. And this language divides us. We don't feel connected. We end up in conflict. These stupid discussions that people are just can't handle the idea of debate to come to a conclusion or to come to a higher understanding. No, language is about conquer, prove, win the debate. Language is not about the idea that both can gain knowledge in a discussion with another human being who doesn't agree with you. No, that is long gone. Now language is about power, as Nietzsche would have had it. Now we can even devolve further, right? The last 10 years, we have reached the end of this journey. So this is a typical random walk person, right? Now language has become about confusion, that's to confuse. And this is really a tower moment of Babel. Will to power is at center of this. Conflict and truth doesn't matter anymore. Now the language has fractured the human race, because language is not about an agreement, understanding, or the idea that we both can benefit from a discussion by other people. No, that's long gone. And the idea that humanity is a spiritual creature, and that language should be aimed at that endeavor, at the metaphysical first. Not only, but your language should be written in symbol terms, symbology, to stimulate the metaphysical concepts, the spiritual part in man. And this is long gone. And the one who promote this is science. Lo and behold, universities, college, indoctrinate kids with this garbage, right? So the fracture of human race is at its peak. Now can we devolve further? Yeah, we have a last state here, but then it's all over, of course. In the end of human devolution, an ape-like state is awaiting for us. What does that mean? It means loss of language, loss of memory, an artificial human. Now, I don't say that we can really devolve into an ape in body, but what we are talking about is that we can really lose our memory and our ability to learn and speak a language, and then the human race will appear as a completely different species. So this is a very important thing, even though a little bit sad, because I think we can end up here pretty fast if we ain't understand this.
Yeah, for sure.
Doesn't take that much, really. Go and visit a primitive culture in a forest who haven't met a civilized human. I'm not saying that they are bad, but they are completely different from you. And I don't think we should go there. I don't think our destiny is to devolve, but to evolve. So let's go to the other side of the end of this, the evolution, and talk about the first language, even older than the hieroglyphs. Then we have to talk about sound and light and color. Sound is important here. Color is important here. The aim at the metaphysical is here. The spiritual side of the language is in the focus here. And I have a picture of Baphomet here, and you can see Ida and Pingala, the Kundalini is rising here. And you can do that. You as well can do this. Then this is a language. This is mem. This is a language, and this a mantra. You use mantra to awaken the Kundalini serpent. And this language can be understood by all. Now, I'm not saying that Sanskrit is easy, but what I'm saying that a mantra is not that hard. You have the classical om, for example. Right. And if you use it in the right way, you will have results as all the rest of us. If you ain't too far removed, right? You will be able to raise the Kundalini serpent, and you will awaken the chakras, and you will start to stimulate your DNA, and you will become another creature. And this is a unifying language. It doesn't matter what country you are from, we can all meet and do this method with the aim to transform and become a bigger creature or a bigger human. Now you can misuse power as well. That's always a possibility. But this is the chakra language. And according to me, this is the kind of language we had before the flood. And of course, some of it survived even after the flood, as we can see. And this is really about your DNA. Because when you start to work with your spiritual body, with your metaphysical you, yourself, through a method, through a language, you can start to ignite your DNA. Now you can become something completely different from the walk, right? So right. This is the furthest away. This is the other side of this. This is two completely different mindsets where the walk mentality is to talk some gobbledygook, to have some power in the matter, right? This is a very straightforward language. This is a method. Do it like this, and you will start to transform, and you will ignite your DNA, and you will go further. And this is really what should be the aim of the human race, of course. Now, we can discuss what kind of a results we want when we work with this, of course. So that's a reason why Enki is considered the scientist. And in the stories, he is the one who manipulated with the human DNA in order to transform us to a higher state. He didn't slice and dice us. He has taught us another language. I think people have a very, like, they see everything in matter. Therefore, he slice and dice. He doesn't really have to do that. He can transform our DNA by teaching us a new language. So now we can start to understand this symbol with the reptilian bird with it, or angel, or what you want to attribute to him. He has a bucket of water, and that is memory, language, nation, science. In it, he has a pine cone, because your third eye will start to work when this is rising around you, like the cities, the temples, the priest class, the esoteric, the nature, and for a moment of time, humanity is in this state. But of course, it starts to devolve pretty fast. Doesn't last. So, in a text we can read about Enki, in Enmerkar and the Lord of Arata, Enki, the Lord of Abundance and True Word, the Lord chosen in wisdom, who watches over the land, the expert of all the gods, the chosen in wisdom, the Lord of Eridu, Enki placed an alteration of the language in their mouth, meaning changing our DNA. Be careful with how you speak and what kind of a language you choose to use, because it will have an impact on you. Now, I'm not saying that you should go learn some new language here, but if you know what it means, then you will be a little bit more careful and maybe think that, maybe I should learn a metaphysical language as well as my language I was born with, and understand and respect what the language should be. Now we come back to Aelo and the Watchers, and the Watchers is a big part of this story as well, of course. And Queen Nama stated thus, even something as seemingly lifeless as your temple floor is in a state of constant movement and change. In fact, through the eyes of the Watchers, the human race is perceived this way. No matter how chaotic and busy you think your experience is, your evolution has come to a point of still lifelessness, Queen Norma. Because we have devolved so far away from the spiritual, and our language is only there to confuse and to have some power in matter, in the material world. The language reflects our state of being as a race. Another watcher who came to Earth was Ramuel. And Ramuel stated this: Ramuel's teaching has been stripped from humanity and defiled to serve the ruling hierarchies of corrupt men. He teaches mankind to become nobler leaders in the chosen field as a springboard of evolution. He views leadership today as a stagnant, oppressive role taken by oppressors. He teaches the expansion of community and how to create harmony by spreading knowledge. So what they are talking about here, of course, that they have taken this knowledge from us and misuse it. And that is a chosen elite who have distorted knowledge, distorted language, turn it against us. I want to take you back to Odin as well and the Well of Mimir. And I will expand upon it. In the first part, I talked about the eye and so on. Well, the Well of Mimir, the well was guarded by Mimir, a shadowy being who becomes all-knowing by drinking the magical waters. Odin asked for a drink, and Mimir replied that Odin must sacrifice an eye for a drink. Odin gouged out his own eye, dropped it into the well, and was allowed to drink from the waters of cosmic knowledge. And here we come, of course, back to water and what it means. Water is memory, memory is knowledge, and also a metaphysical concept that you can talk about astral water, to travel into metaphysical water. So there's more, many layers of meaning here, and you have to be able to see them all at one time in front of you to really get what they're talking about. So the right eye. O all-powerful serpent, breathe upon my right eye and empower all means of our ward perception. Let the diurnal organs of sight, hearing, touch, taste, and smell be transformed into vehicle for the direct apprehension of all manifest realities. May the sacred vision of the dextral gaze here become mine to behold. So the right eye have one thing, and there is one thing, and the left eye is another thing. It's two different concepts we're talking about. One eye is the eye you see into matter, and also the ability to manifest things in matter. The left eye is to see into the metaphysical and the spiritual world. So it makes a difference what I, Odin, sacrificed here. And we go back, I will come back to that soon. So the left eye, what is the left eye about? O all-powerful serpent, breathe upon my left eye and empower all means of inward perception to have the gaze in to the metaphysical and into yourself. Left the oneric organs of sight, hearing, touch, taste, and smell be transformed into a vehicle for the clear apprehension of all that is conceived through divine imagination. May the sacred vision of the sinister gaze here become mine to behold. And that is the eye to see through the illusion to the metaphysical, and also see within yourself. right eye to see things in matter. It is outward, the left eye to see inward and into a metaphysical, spiritual. The right eye ended up on the bottom of the well, and this is the eye Odin sacrificed. Right? He sacrificed the right eye, dropped it into the well. And through it, Odin could see everything he needed to see. He didn't have to drink from the water that was offered to him, because he already knew through his eye, eye water to see through memory, because the eye ended up in the water of the well. Now he started to turn into a boatman, because he started to perceive the different realms through time and space. Right eye, taste and smell be transformed into vehicle for the direct apprehension of all manifest realities. But he had his left eye still. So Odin is a kind of a boatman person or archetype. But you have to sacrifice. You have to work. Nothing is gained for free. Now, I'm not telling you to sacrifice your right eye, right? But the symbology is here is that it is a struggle, and you have to be prepared to sacrifice a lot of things to gain insight and understanding of these different realms, of the ability of necromancy. So that is the end of the prologue. And we continue on with part one, and that's the fingerprints of the gods. And I want to talk a little bit about your blood in your body. And I've mentioned this before, but it's good to talk about it again and hammer home the idea, because it will be in combination of this new material as well. The blood of Kingu, Belial. And Kingu is Belial. Kingu is another name for Belial. And Kingu is the ancient one. And Kingu was the warrior that shows side with Tiamat. And Tiamat and Kingu is the ancient one raging war against the Anunnaki gods. Or the opposite around, depends on what you want to believe. And it was Marduk who defeated Kingu and Tiamat. The blood is in your veins. The Kingu blood is in your veins, in your power to connect to the metaphysical. Blood is memory. And you, according to myth, have the opportunity to contact the ancient one. So it doesn't matter what they do to you. You will still have the opportunity or the knowledge how to connect back to the ancient ones. And the best way for them is to convince you that you can't. This is a war over, this is about manipulation and a war over your mind, really. But as long as you have your blood in your veins, you have the ancient blood within you, and they can't take that away. I think they will try, like maybe create a kind of a blood that drains it, like replace your real blood with artificial kind of a blood. I don't know.
They'll try something, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So the blood of man is the blood of the ancient ones. And the ancient ones was considered to be chaos, right? Therefore, the ruling elite view you as chaos as well. They view you as a potential chaos horde, and they have to control you. And we can see this today more than ever, I think. It is not more in your face today, but because of our technology and so on, we can talk about it and we can reflect upon it. In Roman time, you were a slave and they just told you that upright front and no one thought it was strange or anything. Today they have to pretend that you are free, but you are a slave. on the society rules and so on. So if you come to the myth of the vampire, for example, a vampire takes your power and your memory. And that is a form of necromancy. They steal your memory from you and get powered up by it. And this is very similar to what the gods do. This war is about memory and mind. And it's very important that you start to understand how powerful you can be in mind. That's the reason why they have to manipulate you to convince you that you are only an animal, that you don't have any metaphysical spiritual component to you, attached to you. They don't want you to start ever. And the language is a very powerful tool aimed against you. Part two, the gods in memory. So let's dive into this memory thing and why it's so important. And mind. The power of the gods come from our memory. The gods in turn can become the power source for humanity. So this is a very profound statement, and I will go into it and explain it much more. So once again, water is memory. When we worship the gods, a god egregore starts to build up through memory, our memory. The individual boatman moment, death, erase our memory, but the gods lives on. So because we have a very short lifespan, we forget about our previous life and we have to start all over again. But the gods lives on. So we continue to power them up through our memory. And we become dependent on them to get back some of our memory we have given away to them. We become dependent on the gods because we have no power. We have no memory. And a very good movie talking about this is, of course, Dark City.
Classic Gnostic movie.
Yeah. I highly recommend you to see it after this presentation because it's a lot about
yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about this Jehovah God then. Who is he?
Think we've met before.
I looked pissed off, as always.
Yeah.
I tried to find a picture that portrayed him very well. Right, Exodus 20:3-5, King James Version. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. He wants all your attention. He wants all your memory. He wants all your mind. No other god shall be powered up by your memory and your force and your energy, your attention. And this egregore god will, of course, grow stronger. He warned them that wealth, friends, and those they married could distract them from focusing on him, because he wants everything. The golden god Jehovah is born, powered up by your memory, with you in mind. Mem. So he's telling you as it is. He doesn't try to say something that is straightforward with this one, right? So memory is also trauma, darkness, jealousy, and hidden impulses in man. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the inquiry of fathers on the children of or to the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me. Sounds a lot like a human to me.
Yeah. It's or maybe a little toddler, a little 3-year-old.
Yeah. Because we have powered him up through us. Wings of gold. Carl Jung said, the shadow is 90% pure gold. Sometimes when we have nightmares or dream of disturbing or disgusting things like death or overflowing toilets, we want to turn away from our inner world. We think we all only find darkness there. That we think we will only find darkness there. But underneath the refuse, underneath the repression, there are veins of gold. Meaning that you can transform all of that if you dare to go within. And that's only up to you and no one else. The transformed trauma can turn into gold if you're willing to work with it. That is what Carl Jung is saying here. Anunnaki came from heaven to earth with gold in mind. Fear, trauma, suffering is the fuel of Jehovah and his son, the Demiurge. The shadow stored in memory. And memory is also language, water, blood, and DNA, your gold. So if you don't want to transform, and if you focus on these gods to help you, to save you, you give away your gold. You have to transform. You have to dig up the gold. You shouldn't give it away to an external force and pray for help. That makes you passive, and it will not take you anywhere. If you don't transform your shadow, trauma, and pain, the gods will mine it for you. If you worship Enlil, Ninurta, Jesus, you will give away your gold to an external force. You have to transform it. Religion makes you passive for a reason. Wait for Jesus, beg for help. Because you suffer under fear, you will not transform it yourself. Then the gold will never be yours as well. And that's how it is. You have to be active. You have to work with yourself. You have to find your own gold and then lift it to the surface. And when you see it, you have to transform it. No one else will do it for you. They will mine it for you, but they will not transform it. And there are a lot of humans waiting to abuse you if you don't transform your traumas. They are very happy about that. Even humans mine your gold if you ain't careful. And I say, don't give anything to anyone. I'm a left-hand path practitioner. I say non serviam. Do not serve. You are your own master. Take it back. Gods, angels, demons, and spirits exist outside of you as plasma, but you give them power with your memory. The gods grows in power in memory. You don't, because you forgot the past when you die. And when you die, it is a boatman moment. You have to figure out how to get back, take back the memory. Now you are blank. This is an individual boatman moment. What we are talking about with Noah is a collective boatman moment, where the human as a race are wiped clean, and we have to start all over again.
Makes sense.
If the boatman fails, we don't have to fail. I'm not here to doom and gloom. I tell you, there is a way through this water, and that we should take it.
Yeah, if you were around. If you were doom and gloom, you'd be like, send me $30 and I'll help you. Everybody, $29.99 for salvation.
I will put up the PayPal account.
Right. Yeah. Get rich at the end of the world.
No, I will refuse. I want to empower you, and that's the reason. That's my true will. And I'm here to do it. I'm not about doom and gloom. It's up to us if we want to survive this storm. Reaching the limits of the human mind. When we have reached the limits of the mind, the mining stops. The bodily death becomes a necessity. We have become a threat to them. Too much noise or memory means the flood. If you remember, Enlil, Jehovah didn't like the noise we were making, and therefore he thought, let's drown these humans in the flood. Well, and Jehovah can be overflooded with our memory. And in the end of this journey, as it we are today, now not the end, but in an apocalyptic moment, that we will go through a big change, then the noise is at its peak. Because our trauma, the shadow, has built up within us over and over again. At the same time, we have become powerful as well, because trauma can be used in other ways. We can transform our trauma and become very powerful, knowledgeable, and we can start to understand what I'm saying right now. Then we can take back everything. This polarity is important. When we're farthest away, it is easiest to see what we have lost. Wait a minute. What has happened? How did they end up here in this horrible situation? And what can we do about it when we see down the hill the emptiness and that we are heading for it? We will turn around when we face it. What kind of a God? What kind of a God do you think we have created? After a generation of untransformed floods of memory that have powered up this golem god with fear, trauma, and aggression. Because we haven't been willing to transform it. Now we are here. And when we start to face all this trauma and this darkness, it will become very harsh for us because we have closed our eyes to it for so long. We haven't faced it, and we have become passive to it, and even manipulated to be passive about it. Wait for Jesus. Jesus will fix your trauma. And if you are at least a good girl and boy, you will end up in heaven. Make you passive, right? Sit and hear some gobbledygook bullshit from a priest. Doesn't know what he's talking about, right? And the Bibles are written with a certain language. We have to understand the power of language once again. What language did they choose to write the Bible in? It has been a bastardization of the subject in the Bible as well. The Old Testament was written in Hebrew or Aramaic. In that language, you have to understand the language if you want to understand the Old Testament. If you translate it with our language, you lose the meaning in it. That goes for the newer version as well, the New Testament. What language? Why do people prefer King James Version? There's a huge difference. So in part three, I want to talk about the heartbeat of the machine and the machines, because this tower they are building and have built. And a very interesting person called Flavius Josephus lived like 50 after Christ to 100, worked for the Flavians, and he write the history of the Jews, and it's a very important person in history of Rome. And he is writing about this Tower of Babel. He, Nimrod, also gradually changed the government into tyranny, seeing no other way of turning men from the fear of God, but to bring them into a constant dependence on his power. He also said he would be revenged on God if he should have a mind to drown the world again, for that he would build a tower too high for the waters to be able to reach, and that he would avenge himself on God for destroying their forefathers. So he's talking about the water that cannot reach the tower. And water is memory loss, can be language loss, nation loss, the connection to the metaphysical, to the spiritual loss, a fall into matter. And the human race get splintered and talk different language and doesn't understand each other anymore. He continues on. The Sibyl also makes mention of this tower and of the confusion of the language. But as to the plan of Shinar in the country of Babylonia, Hestasius mentioned it when he says thus, such of the priests as were saved took the sacred vessel of Jupiter and Ialius and came to Shinar of Babylonia. What do they mean by vessel of Jupiter? Of course, there are many meanings in this, and some of them are very deep into metaphysical and into the Sephirots and so on. So there are many layers of understanding that goes for tarot and so on as well. So I'm only talking about the layers that is important for this presentation. So don't tell me that I know it means a lot of things, right? Now, Jupiter, they're talking about Jupiter, vessel of Jupiter. What can that be? What is this priest class? Well, it can really mean two different things, or different priest class at least. Because Marduk and Enlil, both of them, is attributed to Jupiter. And it's really a war between them of the forces of Jupiter. So Enlil had Jupiter to begin with, and then Marduk took over, and then Enlil took over after Marduk. And I will say that Enlil took over when the Tower of Babylon fell. It was an infiltration. So when Marduk has the 50 names and is attributed to Jupiter, Marduk is the one who rules. When Enlil is attributed to Jupiter and he is attributed to the number 50, he is the one who rules over matter, our reality, our matrix, or what you want to call it. So it's a war here between two different factions of Anunnaki who are going to rule over the human kind and their perception of reality. Because the one who rules our perception of reality rules over us as well. So it's very hard to see what's going on, because sometimes it seems that Enlil is in charge and sometimes it seems that Marduk is in charge.
Right.
And a lot of propaganda is going on here, of course. It's very nice to say, Enlil, I am the god of gods and you should rule me. And then humanity start to focus on Enlil and take off the focus on Marduk. And then Enlil get empowered by our focus. So it's a lot of manipulation manipulation for the human mind, because the mind is the one they are aimed at. Our mind are very powerful, and we can manifest our own reality through our beliefs, in different things, in gods and so on. That becomes our reality. And the egregore starts to build up. Flavius, to have it, Nimrod, priest of Marduk, it says. But I would say that Nimrod becomes corrupt after the fall of the tower, or he is there to infiltrate the priesthood of Marduk. Nimrod becomes a priest of Ninurta, meaning Nimrod becomes a priest of Saturn, because Ninurta is Saturn and Ninurta is Jehovah's son. But I think he started out as a priest of Marduk. But become corrupt and infiltrated the Marduk fold. And I will back this claim up as much as I can. Of course, I will come back at it. But as you can see, it's a war over the human mind. It's a manipulation game going on here. Let's back off a little bit from the Anunnaki gods. I will come back to it soon. But we have a very important myth from Egypt as well, talking about similar things. And I will go into how it's connected more later on. But you have the myth of Osiris and Isis, and it's about sex magic. And Osiris was cut into 14 pieces. Because there are ladies around here, I call it his rod, right? But his rod is missing. Resurrection and rebirth. This is about resurrection and rebirth. If we go into the tarot card, this myth is in the cards. And you can read it in card number 13, death. Where Osiris is death, dies. And he's cut into 14 parts. That's next card, of course, 14 parts. And in the death card in Crowley's deck, you will see the fish there. Because the fish took Osiris' rod. And of course, the fish is a nun. In Hebrew, the letter nun is fish. Someone is cutting up Osiris or destroy the Stargate that leads to Sirius. And someone is trying to resurrect that Stargate. And that is Isis for sexual magic. And you can see the lady in card number 14 is mixing masculine force, the fire, and the water, the feminine force, into cauldron. And this is, of course, alchemy. And the next card is the devil. When you do this, you have to overcome the devil. And once again, there are many, many layers of meaning here. So I'm only talking about the meaning that is attributed to this presentation. Then you have to overcome the devil, because this is a alchemical, esoteric process. And when you do this, you have to overcome your own ego. Otherwise, you can start to do all kinds of stuff, because you gain power and knowledge. And you can use this knowledge for different purposes. If you fall prey to the devil or Saturn or matter, then the tower will follow. Because now you enter the tower archetype, a fallen esoteric elite. Now, to reach this gate becomes about technology instead of spirit. Because you can go to Sirius with spirit. with soul, with light. But the elite can't because they have lost it. They will do it through technology instead. They have not given up. they are the ones who will build the tower to achieve the goal. So you have the death card, cutting up Cyrus in 14 pieces, Isis find the parts of Cyrus and put them together, didn't find his rod or penis, and do a sexual magic ritual to resurrect Osiris. Meaning that you can resurrect Osiris within you. But if you fall prey to the devil, your own ego, you will start to fall and misuse the knowledge. And then the tower becomes a necessity for you to reach Sirius. Why reach Sirius? I will talk about it. One thing to note is when I did the decoding of the Shining, I had this 13, 14, and 15, it becomes 42. The number 42 means completion. But completion can mean different things. If you aim with your spirit to achieve or to go to Sirius, the number 42 means that you have achieved your goal. But if you do it through the tower, it means 42 when you have achieved your goal through technology. It's a completion of your aim, what's in your mind. And the tower card means a lot of things, right? So I'm not saying that this is the... There are much more profound things to be found there.
Right.
After the tower, we have the card, the star card, number 17. And we can see in the Rider White deck, a woman pouring water to create boundaries between energy. And the pentagram is about boundaries and to separate different energies, realities from each other, to create boundaries. And in the Crowley deck, we have this beautiful lady pouring the sun in the sun grail, and it becomes the moon, water, and pouring fire into water. And then you have the star, silver star in the left corner, and that star is Sirius. So you have Sirius after the tower card. The tower is aimed at Sirius because some people have fallen prey to their own ego and want this knowledge from themselves, for themselves, in order to control others to boost their own ego. They are still an esoteric elite because they are the ones who are in charge right now, but they have lost their soul spark. Technology becomes their way because that's the only way. They can go into the astral, but they cannot go further than the astral. Then they need technology to do it. You can go further than the astral with knowledge, power, your spirit, your soul. Very interesting myth in Sumer. And it's about the Pyramid Wars. And the Anunnaki gods is in the forefront of this conflict as always. And it's always between these two lines, right? Enki line and Enlil line. And in this myth, Marduk becomes trapped in the pyramid on Giza Plateau. And the incident is called the Pyramid Wars. And it is Ishtar. And Ishtar is a daughter of Enlil, who traps Marduk in this pyramid. And it's a huge war. It's not only these two who are at each other, but there are armies, technology, a lot of things going on here, of course. Gods exist outside of you, plasma. So this is a statement that angels, gods, demons are a form of plasma. I'm not saying that they don't exist outside of you, but you can build them up through your mind by focusing on them. You can charge plasma with memory and thus make them more powerful through you. But you give them power with your memory. The gods grows in power in memory. You don't, because you forgot the past when you die. And this Marduk is trapped in the pyramid. What does it mean? Trapped. Can you trap a god in a pyramid? Yes, you can. If the pyramid is a certain technology and the gods is plasma, then you can trap them. And Azazel have stated that he is trapped in the Saturn moon Mimas. And Mimas seems to be artificial. And if Azazel is a kind of a plasma, then we can understand what they start to talk, what they are talking about. You can trap plasma. You can trap the force of the gods. And of course, there are lots of stories with yins in bottles. You have demons in. You have the stupid horror movie, The Doll. A lot of myth about it, but there is a reality to it. And crystal, I think, is a good good thing to trap spirits as well. Crystal stones, diamonds, and so on. You trap energy.
Hey, shining crazy diamonds. Please subscribe for the second part of this interview. It certainly helps grow this Red Pill cafeteria. What's more, beyond getting the second half, you get content earlier and don't have to worry about flapdoodle commercials here or on other public platforms. So please become a Red Circle sub, Patreon, or AB Prime member for the full consciousness expanding gnosis. At Patreon, I have tiers as low as $1 or $3 a month. And at Red Circle, it's a clean $4.99 a month to stream all full shows. All subs include a dedicated private stream that works on most apps. Don't forget the Gnostic Tarot, which is selling well and optimizing spiritual growth based on the feedback I've gotten, and the Virtual Alexandria Academy. I can't do it without you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.